Well, happy Sabbath to all of you. It's good to be here. Beautiful Sabbath day. Well, as you, I'm sure you know, in a few weeks, we will be gathering for holy day and a meeting that we have called the Passover. And that's about 3 weeks away. So today I want to speak a little bit about Passover. And I wanted to get our minds thinking about Passover and the days of unleavened bread and what they mean to us. I think I'll give you my title up front, and this sort of serves as my SBS, my title is Passover and the Quartodeciman Controversy. The Passover and the Quartodeciman Controversy. I hope all of you have heard of Quartodeciman. Quartodeciman is a word that comes from the Latin. Quarto means four or fourth. Deciman comes from the word that we get decimal, so it means tens, so you put it together and it comes out 14th. So quartodeciman just means the 14th. The 14th of what? The 14th of the first month of the Hebrew calendar called Nisan or Abib. That's what quartodeciman means. I don't know why they have to have a difficult word like that. I'll leave you on your own if you to figure out how to spell it in case you're taking notes. You could probably come pretty close. You know, we hear a lot about church fathers. And, you know, a church father said this or a church father said that. And that's really important according to lots of people that study such things, that this church father made all of these pronouncements and so on. Well, actually, most church fathers are Gentile. Did you know that? I can only think of one church father that was Jewish, and his name was Ignatius. And I'm not going to talk about him today because, well, just because one of the reasons is his history is contested. We don't know exactly about his history. There are two church fathers that really stand out, especially to those of us who keep the Sabbath, to keep the holy days, and so on. And I'm just going to talk about those two and tell you a little bit about them. First one I want to talk about is Polycarp, and that's spelled P-O-L-Y-C-A-R-P. And you probably know he was Greek. The word poly means much or many, and the word carp means fruit. So his name means much fruit. And he has a good name because he has a really, really good fruit. What Polycarp did that made him so famous in Sabbatarian quarters is that he made a trip to Rome to meet with Pope Anicetus. What was happening in the church is that people in the church, and I'll let you figure out what I mean by church. You know, there was a church that was straying from the truth, and there was a church that was adhering to the truth. And yet they were all together for a period of time. But anyway, Polycarp went to Rome to speak to Pope Anicetus. And he went there because he wanted to discuss whether or not we should be keeping what they call Easter on Sunday, or we should be keeping the Passover on the 14th. And so they had quite a discussion, and what they did is they agreed to disagree. Polycarp says that he was the bishop of Smyrna, and he said, we will keep the Passover on the 14th, as Jesus Christ did and as the apostles did. So he couldn't persuade the Anicetus differently, but that's what he did. He and his church kept the Passover on the 14th. And of course, that means they also kept the days of unleavened bread and so on. The second church father, actually, I don't believe this gentleman is called a church father. In a sense, I can see why. Polycarp is called a church father, even though he was true. I didn't tell you all I should about Polycarp. Polycarp was an acquaintance of the Apostle John. He knew the Apostle John personally, and he was a disciple, a student of the Apostle John. Polycarp also knew other people who had conversation with Jesus himself. So he was very closely tied to the original apostles. I don't know that he knew any of the 12, but he knew apostles that sprang out of the 12. So the next one I want to talk about is Polycrates. And his name is spelled like it looks like it should be Polycrates, but it's not. It's spelled Polycrates, but it's spelled Polycrates. And what his name means is much power. Much power or strength, something to that effect. When Polycarp, the other one I mentioned, went to Rome, it was in 154 AD when he went to have this conference with the Pope. Polycrates did not go to Rome, but what he did was he wrote a letter to the Pope that was Pope at his time. He went in 190 AD, he wrote this letter to Pope Victor I. And he said in this letter, we are keeping the Passover. We're not keeping Sunday that you call Easter. We're not keeping Sunday. We're keeping the Passover. And he apparently said a lot of other things in this letter. And let me read just one thing that he wrote to the Pope. He says, we, the church, he was a bishop of the church at Ephesus. He says, we observe the exact day. I'm wondering if I have those mixed up. One of them was a bishop of Ephesus. The other was a bishop of Smyrna. The one and two churches mentioned in Revelation. Polycrates, I believe, was a bishop of Ephesus, and Ephesus was in that time a very influential church. And let me tell you what happened. He wrote this in his letter: we observe the exact day, neither adding nor taking away. For in Asia also great lights have fallen asleep. Among those are Philip, one of the 12 apostles, moreover John, who was both a witness and a teacher, who reclined upon the bosom of the Lord. All these observed the 14th day of Passover according to the gospel. Now, what do you think Pope Victor thought about that? Well, it infuriated him to no end. He was really angry about that, and he said, I'm going to excommunicate all the churches of Asia, all the churches of God of Asia. I'm throwing them out of the church. They call it excommunication. We don't use that word today, but some do. So he was vowed to do that. But what happened is some came to Polycrates' aid and said, and talked the Pope out of disfellowshipping all the churches. And one of the people that helped him was Irenaeus. And Irenaeus at one time was a follower of the Apostle John. However, at this point in time, Irenaeus had flipped over, and he was keeping Sunday and Easter. But anyway, he had enough sense to talk to the Pope and didn't allow him to disfellowship the churches. How long that lasted, we don't really know. We know that eventually the false doctrines took over. So since both of these church fathers mentioned the Apostle John, let me tell you a little bit about the Apostle John. In 95 AD, Domitian, who was a evil emperor of Rome, not a pope, an emperor, he sent the Apostle John to the Isle of Patmos, and the Isle of Patmos was where they sent all kinds of criminals and so on. There's a idea, and whether or not it's true, nobody really knows. Eusebius repeats it, but they said that originally Domitian and his cohorts took John and threw him in boiling oil, and it didn't bother John. He jumped out of the oil and he was okay. Now, whether or not that's true or not, I mean, that story is told over and over as being true. But anyway, he did ban him to the Isle of Patmos. And you know what happened there. He wrote the book of Revelation while he was on Patmos. But there is a little bit of irony that I want to tell you about. I don't know if this is all that relevant. But he was sent to the Isle of Patmos in 95. And 1900 years later, in 1995, guess what happened? Well, the United Church of God began because they were taking the doctrines and throwing them out and observing something else. So it's kind of a bit of an irony there that 1900 years to the month almost, because they said John was there for 18 months, and they know he came home and he was released in 96, September of 96. And if he's in there 18 months, that means he must have been banned there during the spring. And that's exactly when UCG started, in the spring. Now, the reason he was released in 96 is because the Roman Senate assassinated Domitian, because the Roman Senate didn't like him anyway. They really kind of hated him. And so they plotted against him, and I think they stabbed him to death. And the emperor that took over immediately released John and other prisoners from the Isle of Patmos. So now I want to pose the question, how, why did they want to change Passover to Easter? Why would they want to do such a thing? Well, I don't know that I can answer that question, but I want to go through what they tell is the reasoning for that. The reasoning is that they said that Jesus was resurrected on Sunday, and therefore that makes Sunday a very special day, and that was their signal from God that Sunday should be the day of worship, and that no longer would keep the 14th, but keep Sunday near the 14th. So let me tell you, at the time this happened, they determined the date for Easter. And let me read it so I'll get it carefully. Easter, the timing of Easter is this: the first Sunday on or after the full moon after the vernal equinox. That was the sum total of the formula, except if that Sunday happened to be the 14th of Nisan or Abib, then Easter would be the next Sunday. So you can see what was driving some of this was anti-Jewish thought. It was deeply rooted. And in a way, you can see why. In 70 AD, the temple was destroyed, and they killed, according to Josephus, they killed over a million Jews in 70 AD. Then again, in 135 AD, there was another Jewish rebellion, and they killed another 580,000 there. So you can see how the church, which was very heavily Gentile, could look at that and they say, has God abandoned Israel? Has God abandoned the Jews? You can see that thought was prevalent. Actually, the churches of, I didn't tell you what Polycrates did. He called a conference of all the churches in Asia, all of the churches in Asia, and they got together and then they proclaimed that we were going to keep the Passover, not Easter. And so all the churches of Asia for a period of time kept the Passover. And again, we don't know how long that occurred. Now let me tell you a little bit about Constantine and what he did. Constantine became emperor of Rome in 306 AD, and he embraced Christianity. They say he was converted, but whatever. He embraced Christianity in 312 AD. Then in 325 AD, he held the Council of Nicaea, and at that council, he declared the proper formula for Easter, and he declared Passover illegal. And so from then on, the visible church kept Easter. What happened to the true churches, we don't really know. History kind of loses track of them, but Mr. Armstrong thinks they went underground and existed, and so do I. Okay, now I would like to read you some of the verses that they use to say Sunday is the day of worship, because at the same time the Passover was being expunged and Easter, the Sabbath was under attack too. in Acts 20, verse 7, if you want to turn there, Acts 20, verse 7, they say this is one of the verses that gives them the authority to change the Sabbath to Sunday. It says, now on the first day of the week, for sure, that's Sunday, when the disciples came together for what? To break bread? Exactly, that's what it says. It doesn't say when the disciples came together for services. It says they came together to break bread. And anybody in that era of time knows that means to have a meal. Then it says, Paul, ready to depart the next day, spoke to them and continued his message until midnight. Now notice verse 8. There were many lamps in the upper room where they were gathered together. Why were the lamps on? Because this was Sunday night. You don't have services on Sunday night. This was a meeting to see Paul off because he was leaving the area. And so that has nothing to do with the day of worship, as you all really know. Now, turn to Romans 14, verse 5. Romans 14, verse 5. And I'm not going to take time to give you the context here, but I'll just tell you the context in Romans 14 is about what to eat and what not to eat, when to eat, and so on, when to fast and not fast. All of Romans 14 has to do with eating or not eating things. And then verse 5 says, one person esteems one day above another, and another esteems every day alike. Let each be fully convinced in his own mind. So in context, he's saying that some people set aside one day to fast, and other people don't. And Paul is saying, don't worry about it. Don't be concerned about it. Whatever they want to do. There's nothing wrong with that. But this has nothing to do with the day of worship. Absolutely nothing. And yet I know personally people that have pointed to that and said, see there, the Sabbath is not special. If you esteem another day better, there's nothing wrong with that. Then turn to Revelation 1, verse 10. This was written by the Apostle John. And here again, I don't want to cover a whole lot. I don't have that much time. But John says, while he was writing the book of Revelation, he says, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day, and I heard behind me a loud voice as of a trumpet. And from the context, you can see that Paul is saying God propelled him forward in time to the day of the Lord. And all of Revelation, nearly all of Revelation, is about the day of the Lord, what leads up to it, what happens during it, and so on. So again, this has nothing to do with the day of worship. He's talking about, he calls it the Lord's day, but it's the same as the day of the Lord. So none of these verses that I've read, and there are a few others that I don't have time to cover, have anything to do with doing away with the Sabbath. You can't do away with the Sabbath. God sanctified it and made it holy. We can't meddle with it. Anyway, let me conclude here and just say, why are we interested in all these old things that happened? Controversy about the 14th. Well, it's helpful to know the strong individuals came before us and were true to the church. They would not bend. They would not be persuaded into something that is not right. And Of course, Polycarp and Polycrates were two of those. So, as Jude said, we need to earnestly contend for the faith that was once delivered. And so, you and I, in about 3 weeks, will meet to take the Passover, the same Passover that Jesus Christ took. And I hope you're looking forward to that time.